Welcome to the Been There, Got Out podcast. I'm Lisa, a state-certified domestic violence advocate and veteran of more than 8 years in the trenches of the legal system, the last five successfully representing myself.
And I'm Chris. I'm a certified high-conflict divorce coach. And between the two of us, we have all this knowledge and experience that we never wanted. But now we can put it to great use, providing expert guidance to people in high conflict divorce and custody situations, so you have the best chance in court and beyond.
Having the right support from people who get it is so critical to getting you and your children through it as unscathed as possible. And that's exactly what we do through our interviews with experts and other content right here on this podcast. So let's get to it. It's Lisa from Been There, Got Out, and tonight's guest has been here multiple times. We adore Chelsea Brooke Cole. There she is. She's a therapist, narcissist coming out soon. So we're very excited. I just invited you, Chelsea. Very excited that she's back on here because we're going to talk about a topic that we haven't talked about before. Hey, Chelsea.
Hello. How are you guys?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. It seems like you guys are everywhere these days. I see all your stuff. You're like traveling. Like y'all got it going on right now.
Thanks. Yeah, I know. We're going to Chicago this week. We're really excited. I think we might get to see some of our clients in person because we rarely, if ever, get to meet them in person. So we're psyched about that. California next month. So, but you're busy too. You want to briefly introduce yourself for those people who don't already know you and say what your big project is?
Yeah, so Chelsea Brooke Cole, anybody who doesn't know, I'm a psychotherapist, certified partner trauma therapist, specializing in narcissistic abuse and relational trauma. My big thing that I've had going on for a while that is finally now available is my book. I have it here.
What?
I know.
Wow. So that seems like it was so fast.
Yeah, it seemed like...
How do you have that already? If I was just writing something like 3 weeks ago, how do you have that?
Oh, I know. It seems like such a process for me, but I think this has been in the making for so long. So it's always super cool to get your first book or to actually see it, you know, in person because you work on it for so long.
Congratulations.
I know you guys, I know y'all know the feeling. So it's available for pre-order now, and I can talk more about that, but super, super excited to have it available. It's broken into three parts. The first is really understanding narcissism. So we have to understand the inner workings of a narcissist. The second part is really helping people heal from their traumas, attachment wounds, understand the trauma bond. We get into all of that, talk about six different types of narcissists. And then the last part is really on healing, post-traumatic growth strategies. What do you do with all the information? We have information these days. But how do you take that and apply it and heal? So I tried my best to kind of condense my therapy and coaching work into a book and make it available for people. So it's like therapy in book form, if we can call it that.
That's excellent. I cannot wait to get a copy and read the whole thing instead of just a little chapter snippet. So big congratulations. Thanks for coming back on. You always have so much wisdom. And I know we've talked in the past about narcissists and kids, different types of narcissists on social media. And so today we're going to talk about something we haven't talked about before, which is a huge issue with the people in our community dealing with high conflict divorce, separation, post-judgment, custody battles. And that is religious abuse. And this comes up regularly and people are so ashamed because they've been, you know, we know how important community is. And with religion, often community is such a big part of it. So why don't you tell us what religious abuse actually means for people who don't know what that is?
Yeah, and this is something I'm seeing more and more. So this is why I really wanted to talk about it today, because I have so many clients, whether their partner or their parent is a narcissist, they're using religious abuse is essentially a misuse of religious concepts in a way that benefits the narcissist and allows them to abuse you more effectively. So narcissists who are using spiritual abuse, religious abuse, often look great to the outside. They have an image that they're really active in religious spaces, or they, you know, have these certain beliefs. And so people think, well, they're such a nice person, or so active in the church, or they're so helpful, they're so kind. So narcissists who use religious abuse really craft an especially well-to-do image, so that the people on the inside, like the partners, or if this person is your parent, you feel especially isolated because no one on the outside is seeing the chaos, the conflict, the abuse that the narcissist is inflicting on you at home.
Yeah, and I wonder, do you feel like religious communities have more narcissists than our regular society? Do you feel like narcissists are drawn to religion or organized religion?
Yeah, that's a great question. Narcissists are drawn to positions across the board where they can have power and influence. So that's why we see, like, in CEOs and the C-suite, we can see narcissism up to like 30% of CEOs. I mean, it's like 1 in 3. So you walk in certain rooms and it's like 1 in 3 people or persons that you're talking to is probably a narcissist.
Oh my God.
I think in general, any organized religion or leadership position, something where narcissists are going to be viewed in a positive way, because that's really what narcissists are after, right? Their image. They don't care how things really are or who they really are. They care what things look like. So a narcissist doesn't have to be good to feel good about themselves. They just have to look good. And I think religion allows narcissists to do that.
Yeah. I mean, I'm thinking that part of that might involve not questioning.
Mm-hmm. Tell me more what you mean.
Well, I think about for certain systems to operate that you kind of have to, everybody has to believe the same thing and everybody has to have certain values. And so there's a level of conformity with certain types of communities. And if you don't conform and if you question, mm-hmm. then you're out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And I see a lot of times in religious spaces there is, and I get this on the one hand, like religious leadership and churches and organizations often assume that people there are there for the right reasons. You know, you have an assumed innocence or an assumed, like, that you're there for the right reason, that you want to be a better person. And narcissists, of course, are usually really good at reading the room, especially the grandiose narcissist. They're good mm-hmm. at knowing what's expected from them. And they know the things that they should say. So a lot of times in these spaces, I mean, I've been in rooms with narcissists within church and within religion, and they know the things that they should say so that the religious leaders look at them and think that they're getting better or that they're improving or that they understand the seriousness of whatever we're there for. But the person who's sitting beside them, who's like at home with the narcissist, knows that they're still being manipulative or they're still lying or they're still hiding things. So I think a lot of times narcissists use this assumed innocent status to more effectively manipulate behind the scenes.
I was going to say, do you think that narcissists, sorry, my dog is panting really loudly.
My cat's around.
I can hear it. But do you feel like narcissists can specifically take advantage more in religious communities, or how do they specifically use religion versus like a business environment?
Well, I think there's a lot of positive things, you know, about religion. And in a conversation like this, I think it's always want to highlight that I consider myself a religious person. Like, I'm not advocating for people to leave, because I see what a lot of times happening is narcissists get in religion and people are hurt by that. And they're hurt by the church or they're hurt by that religious organization. And then they don't feel safe at all. They lose a part of their identity, something that's been a part of their value system. And the narcissist just destroys that for them. So I think it's really important that we're talking about this so that we can have an understanding of what narcissism looks like in religious spaces and be able to call it out. So this is definitely not a push to leave religion. It's to inform and advocate so that more people feel safe in these spaces. And I think narcissists use certain concepts in religion, like forgiveness is especially one that comes up. Of course, we know with narcissists, forgiveness is you know, basically your forgiveness is permission to keep hurting you. So that's what's so dangerous, because you have church leadership or organizational leadership, and maybe yourself, you have a value that, you know, I should be a forgiving person. But what do you do when you meet someone who uses your forgiveness to keep hurting you?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's what happens a lot of times with narcissists. They're able to use concepts that mean a lot to people, like forgiveness and second chances and being a good person. And the narcissist feeds that back to you like, well, if you're this Christian that you say you are, if you are such a good person, mm-hmm. who would you be not to give me a second chance? Like, I'm telling you, I get it. I'm telling you that I want, you know, another chance with you, or that I understand now I'm going to do better. I'm trying. So who are you, this good person you say you are, you pretend you are, why would you not give me another chance? And I've seen that happen a lot with narcissists.
And that actually ties into a post that we reposted from our friend Stephanie, who's a lawyer in New York City. And she was talking about a type of gaslighting that she sees in family court, where it's just the same thing that you just alluded to, with like, let's think about moving forward. Let's not focus on the past. Stick, right?
Oh, so much. I can't tell you how many times my clients say the narcissist is saying, why do you want to bring up the past? Like, I'm ready to move forward. I'm ready to make this work. What are you doing? All you want to do is drudge up the past and tell me about my past sins and remind me of all the ways that I've failed. And why can't we just move on? And they definitely frame that in a way to make you feel bad. You're not trying to drudge up the past. You're trying to have them be accountable. And I think that's a lot of times what's missing in religious spaces, is that is the view that, well, if they say that they get it, we have to take them at their word and then let's just move on. Okay, they are saying this, but let's put things in place to make sure they're accountable, to make sure that they are actually following through. Let's do check-ins and make sure you're talking to the survivors and the people who are harmed by narcissists, instead of just taking them at their word for it and assuming that they're getting better and that the spouse or the daughter or the son or whoever it is who's supposed to be a support, they're looked at like, well, you should just support the narcissist and you need to help them get better, and like, don't continue like beating them over the head with it. You're not trying to. You're trying to protect yourself because you've seen this pattern again and again and again, and you just want some accountability.
Yeah, and what you're saying makes me think so much of the dynamic in these sort of codependent relationships, where we think, oh, well, we should put their feelings first. But you minimize your own feelings. So I'm also thinking about the concept of trust, that when trust is broken, you don't just say, oh, forget about it, I'm going to trust blindly again. It takes a long time to repair that. So for someone to say, or for you to even say to yourself, I should just forgive them and move on, that doesn't feel right. And it's like you're completely shutting yourself down and your own feelings and needs down, which is harmful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's kind of an extreme example, but when I use, it's like if someone, I don't know, murders someone and then they want to join the church. Okay. I mean, let's say that they repented, or there was whatever, like somehow they're, I don't know if it was like an accident or something. Like, I'm just using an extreme example. But
right. There's
people who come into the church and they have this past, and then they have like accountability. Like, people know about these certain things. So are you going to, let's say, leave them alone with the kids? Or are you going to put them in certain positions in church? Probably not. And I feel like narcissism is the one thing that people are like, well, if they say they get it, then we just have to trust them and move on. Like, there's no accountability around the effects that they've had on other people. Like you said, the survivors, the ones who have actually been hurt by this, are expected to just move on. And if you don't, then you're portrayed as the one who's being unforgiving or not Christian enough or a bad person, or you're sinning in some cases.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm thinking about also, smear campaigns.
Yeah.
In religious communities, they seem to be, smear campaigns are horrible, but they seem to be very, very harsh. Do you mm-hmm. have experience with that, or your clients deal with that ever? Because we hear that regularly.
Mm-hmm. I mean, personally, some of my most healing relationships have been people from the church and in religious spaces. I mean, they're the most kind, generous, compassionate people. And then some of the worst things that have happened, like the worst smear campaigns, the biggest lies, come from people who also are in the same spaces.
Yeah, isn't that ironic?
Yeah.
Why? How can such kind people be so vicious, jump on the bandwagon, become flying monkeys? How does that happen?
You know, right. I think that's the great point. In two things, people are either truly ignorant, like they genuinely don't know what they don't know. They don't realize that this person is a narcissist. Maybe they only see this person from the outside. They really have no idea what the facts are, what the truth is of the situation. And the people around them just look at them and say, oh, they're such a good person, or they're so active in this church or in this religion, or they say they're a Christian. So like, I'm sure, again, there's that assumed believability, like they have this good reputation. So mm-hmm. I'm going to trust this person. Or maybe the narcissist has their whole family in church. Like, I can't tell you how many narcissists I've encountered where it's not just them that's in church, their whole family's in church. And their whole family is a mix of like narcissism and enablers. So these people at church or on the outside are like, well, they come from such a good family. Like, I can't imagine that they would do something like this. Their whole family goes to church. That's how I've been duped by some narcissists, because I knew people who knew them, or I knew their family. And I thought, well, they come from a good family. They seem like a really nice person. Like, I don't think they're hiding anything. Like, I have every reason to believe them. So I think flying monkeys and things and enablers happen because people genuinely don't know. And then I think it's because people want to believe that there's just good in the world, and that people wouldn't do something to harm you. I think some people have a hard time wrapping their mind around the fact that there are some people who genuinely want to manipulate you. Like, they don't want to believe in the concept of narcissism because that threatens their worldview. It threatens mm-hmm. what they believe about people and just how you can move about in the world. So I think that's another reason that sometimes you get this pushback, because people just don't want to believe that narcissists exist.
Yeah, and that doesn't just apply to narcissism in religious communities. I was just reading a book about legal abuse, and it was saying how hard it is to talk to just regular people that don't get it, because they put these filters on. And it's like, if that's true, then there's no justice in the world. Like, when people sometimes talk about their experience they have in our community with going to court for years and years, and in orders not being enforced, and injustice, and people are like, I can't listen to it, because it would just rock my world to think that this is actually real and going on. So very parallel. I don't know if you saw, there's a movie out that it's kind of an indie thing. It's called The Starling Girl. Excellent. Yeah, really excellent. But it involves a lot of dynamics within a particular religious community. And what I noticed was how certain people are blamed and certain people are just excused from any kind of questioning, specifically somebody in certain roles in the church, where if somebody comes and says, this is something going on, like, this is what's happened to me, that people think, well, it must be you. It must be you. I would never even question that other person because of that, the position that they hold in this community.
Mm-hmm. Right. And that gets to the fundamental reason people don't want to believe in narcissism, and why in general we get this pushback in society, because it's like, if they haven't had that personal experience with a narcissist, then they can like put blinders on and feel like, no, the world is a safe place. Like, most people are good people. You should be able to trust people, and you're coming in and telling this completely different story. And I often say, like, what narcissists do is so crazy, you feel crazy for explaining it. So it's really hard to explain to people who have no concept of what narcissism looks like. it's hard to explain it to them without looking like the crazy person, because you are aware of how crazy it sounds. That's why we hesitate to tell people who don't get it, because I even, my own stories, I'll preface it and say, listen, if I didn't live through this, I would think this is crazy. Mm-hmm. So just know that I hear it and I know how crazy it sounds. And a lot of times after narcissistic abuse, the world becomes divided between people who get it and people who don't. And it's so painful sometimes to share with people who don't get it. I think that's another reason a lot of people don't share, especially in religious circles, because you have all of this emphasis on being a forgiving and compassionate person. And then people think that often means you don't set boundaries, like, ever. Mm-hmm. I think that's a whole other conversation we could get into. But I think we have to stop looking at those as two different things. Like, you can forgive someone, but you can also set a boundary with them. And like, setting a boundary doesn't mean you're a bad person. It doesn't mean that you're not forgiving them.
Yeah. And as you're saying this, and the word that keeps coming up too, is when you said accountability, I'm thinking making amends. Mm-hmm. When somebody really harms you or other people, to just say, I'm sorry, it's meaningless. It's hollow. Like, what have they actually done to show they've changed, rather than just say it's easy. It's easy to say, I'm sorry, I'll never do it again.
Right. Yeah. Changed behavior is the only apology.
Yeah. So somebody just wrote a comment that church people tend to be more gullible than others. What do you think about that?
I think that that's probably true. Again, it goes back to this idea of what you believe about the world and people in general. And if you've only been in, let's say, the church context and you haven't been outside of it, then maybe your circle genuinely is good people. Like, for the most part, again, if you go to people who've been raised in the church or their family goes to church, then perhaps in their circle, people are trustworthy. And there's this divide of like, well, there's the people in the church, and I think most people are good. And if you've experienced something that's really awful, then that's just really rare. Like, that's one of those offshoots, you know, kind of exceptions. Most people are good. And if you were dealing with someone who was manipulative or betrayed or lied so much, and they were just kind of a psychopath, like, those people don't exist normally in the world. And so, yeah, I think to that point, people really underestimate how narcissists work, and that they are active in the church, because the church serves several purposes for narcissists. I mean, it allows them to have this cover. If they can have a certain image in a community or in a certain space, then they can do so much more damage than if people actually knew what was going on.
Yeah. I'm thinking also, are there any red flags you can think about with religious abuse in particular?
Mm-hmm. I know some people have described it like the person says all the right things. Like, they check all the boxes, they go to church, their family's in church, they say the right things, but I know we've talked about this before, our gut says so much. Like, it's like the person says the right things, but something in you goes, it just doesn't sound right. A lot of narcissists who are using religious abuse say the scriptures, or they say the religious traditions, but they do it in a way where they're entitled and they still put you down. For example, I know some of my clients who are married to narcissists who are spiritually abusing them. They will act like they have this special relationship with God, almost as if they speak for God and they can interpret for God. Like, well, God has spoken to me and told me this, and whatever they're telling you, it's to manipulate you better. It's them saying, well, God has like blessed me with, you know, just the ability to really impact people. And so I need to be in this kind of religious leadership position. And you're like, okay, yeah, you do a lot of good things, but at home, you just use that to really manipulate me or to put me down, like if it's the spouse. And so I think those are some things to look for, like always listen to your gut. And if this person is saying the right things, but they are just using it in order to manipulate you more effectively, then that's a problem.
You know, as you're describing that, I'm thinking they're using triangulation with God.
Yes.
Like, oh, me and God feel this way.
Exactly. You know? Yes. That's such a good way to put it. Yeah. They're putting themselves like on this pedestal as if, you know, only they can correctly interpret the Bible or interpret this scripture. And if you want to be a good person, then you're going to listen to them because look at all the good I do. Like, clearly I'm a very godly person. Like, look how much I help. Look how much I give. Look how much scripture I know. And that's what really gets to people. They're like, well, but they do know so much and they do so much good. Like, how can someone be so in the Bible or in their religion? How can they know it so well? But something inside of me is saying that they don't treat me well, though. Like, they're super domineering to me, or they're really manipulative, or I've caught them in lies. Like, it doesn't make sense. And there we go back to that cognitive dissonance that we often experience. Like, this person isn't matching what I expected. Like, my expectations and reality are out of whack. And then we start to go to work justifying and thinking, this person does so much good. They're so actively involved in the community. Like, they really do help so many people. It must be me. I must be misinterpreting this.
Yeah. And one of the red flags for me personally, not all the time, but when someone is like, look at how good a person I am. Look how good I am. Like, I am such a good person. I am such an honor. And I'm thinking, you don't need to say this to me. Like, I can see for myself, right? Don't draw conclusions for me that I should have the time and ability to figure out for myself. Like, it's people who almost are trying to sell themselves. Mm-hmm. That makes me really uncomfortable.
That's a great point. And narcissists are always trying to sell themselves. And that goes to some of the gaslighting that happens is narcissists try to get inside your head. They don't allow you to have your own thoughts and feelings and perceptions of them. They almost tell you what to think, what to feel, and how to perceive them.
Right.
So that, yeah, they don't allow for your own perspective. They tell you how you should be viewing them. And if you don't view them the way they tell you to, then it's because you aren't as good as them in some way.
Yeah. So, okay. So let's say someone's in a religious community and terrible things have happened and they've tried to bring it up to other people in that community and nobody believes them. What options do they have?
Mm-hmm. I know. I sigh because it is a really hard one. And we know that to heal from narcissistic abuse, you really have to find people who get it. And so sometimes it's not so much about, leaving all of your values or maybe even your religious beliefs. Maybe you do have to find a different group, though. Maybe you do have to seek out other resources or other organizations to be a part of that are more trauma-informed. I think it's a tough decision because maybe you've been in this organization for a long time. I know some people feel like they have no choice but to leave their home church or to leave wherever they are because the narcissist has such a good reputation there that no one will believe that they've been through this.
Mm-hmm.
So whether you decide to stay or go, I think you have to keep in mind what is best for your healing. For some people, that means you kind of do your own thing from home for a while, or you seek out, again, another space. But yeah, I know that's a hard one.
Yeah. Okay. So Chelsea, I don't know what else I missed with religious abuse. I'm not sure if there's more with that or if not, I mean, it's a huge topic, of course, narcissistic abuse in general, but do you touch on this in your book? And if not, then what are you any other specific types of narcissistic abuse? I mean, you mentioned a little bit at the beginning, but let's go back to that.
Yes. So like I said, I talk about six different types of narcissists in my book. Of course, I can't cover the big ones, grandiose, the vulnerable, or the covert we often talk about. The two that I see a lot of religious abuse happening with is the communal narcissist and the self-righteous narcissist.
Okay, communal tell us about those.
Yeah. So communal narcissists are very active in religious spaces, nonprofit organizations. They're the philanthropists, humanitarians, do-gooders of the world. But they aren't doing these things for the sake of, you know, actually doing good. They are doing it for the praise and validation they expect to receive because of it. So a lot of times, communal narcissists work tirelessly to present this self-sacrificing image to themselves. And it's super disorienting for the people close to a communal narcissist because other people are seeing them as almost like this saint-like person. Like, they're very active, again, in the religious spaces, the nonprofit organizations, but they're just as antagonistic and critical as any other narcissist interpersonally. So if you're close to them, you're getting a completely different side. So I've seen a lot of religious abuse used with communal narcissists. The malignant communal narcissist is often a cult leader. So talk about a malignant narcissist as well. And the self-righteous narcissists tend to be very organized, almost painfully so. Like if it's about orderliness or cleanliness or uniformity, whatever it is their thing, they tend to be very very judgmental of people who aren't living up to their standard in whatever area of life that they are almost obsessively orderly about or obsessive about perfecting themselves in that certain area of life. So I've seen self-righteous narcissists. They tend to be very morally superior, ethically conscious. They can be very active in religious spaces and they're incredibly hypocritical. So they often have very dogmatic views on a particular subject. Let's say that they absolutely abstain from alcohol and they really judge anyone who drinks, but then they're hiding a secret sex addiction or porn addiction. Mm-hmm. So these are the ones that are super hypocritical. And I've seen a lot of those narcissists use religious abuse as well. So those are in my book. And I think that will be really helpful for people to see.
Oh, definitely. All right. So Chelsea, how can people find your book and how can they find you if they want to talk more about this or anything else related to narcissism?
Well, obviously I'm on Instagram at Chelsea Broke Cole. I'm also on Facebook, LinkedIn, TikTok, Pinterest. If you want more information about my book, you can go to a link in my bio on my Instagram, or you can go to chelseabrookcole.com and you'll get it there as well.
Okay, great. All right. Well, thanks so much, Chelsea. It was great catching up with you.
Yes. Thank you so much. And I hope you all have time to rest. Y'all are so busy. So I hope things keep going well.
Thanks. And we look forward to seeing how your book starts taking off too.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Yeah, it's available for pre-order now. I should probably mention that to people. You'll get pre-order bonuses, two extra chapters that are not in the book, an opportunity to get signed copies, and an 80-minute coaching session with me. We're going to do a raffle for that. So if you pre-order, you'll be able to get that. And then, of course, the book will be available on August 15th.
Excellent. All right. Well, congratulations again, and we will talk soon.
Okay. Bye.
Thanks. Bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Been There, Got Out podcast. Please leave us a review on whatever platform you're listening on. And you can find us easily on all major social media, but especially Instagram and YouTube. If you think we might be able to help you with your own situation, just visit beentheregotout.com and click the button to schedule a complimentary discovery call. Thanks again, and see you next time.